Welcome back to the Bulls Beat, Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls. And I'd say maybe the biggest news in a period where there's not a whole lot of news is Anthony Davis calling Chicago the mecca of basketball. And I'll read you a couple quotes. "It's basketball in any condition. You find a way to play. Their love for the game is tremendous," Davis said. "No matter if it's hot or freezing cold in the gym or outside, it's raining, whatever. Any basketball player from Chicago, it means a lot more to us because we are a basketball city. And we are the mecca of basketball. You can quote me on that." When discussed, "Would you come play for the Chicago Bulls?" Anthony Davis says, "I mean, definitely hometown. If the opportunity ever presents itself, and when that time comes, I'll definitely consider it." Of course, that gets Bulls fans kind of excited, but, you know, it was sort of a politically correct answer. He's in Chicago at a Nike camp for kids, kind of gave a little bit of a correct answer there. But on the other hand, you know, he didn't say the very stereotypical, "Well, I'm just focusing on the Lakers. I'm a Laker right now. I'm focused on this season." You know, he still left the window there. And you could have gone politically correct with that answer, or you could have gone politically correct with the answer I just gave. And he chose the politically correct answer that kind of left the door open. I don't think there would be much to criticize Anthony Davis on either way. But I do think it's interesting that it leaves open this sliver of hope that if the Bulls can put themselves in position where they're contending and things go well, and the Lakers don't end up going super great this year, it would not surprise me at all if Anthony Davis plays the free agent game and leaves the Lakers this season. I mean, I know they hope to extend him and expect to extend him, but let's say LeBron is hurt for half the year and Davis has kind of a rough season. Maybe he's hurt a little bit. The cast doesn't work out that well. And for whatever reason, this team fizzles in the first round of the playoffs. And he has to look, do I want to come back and play with LeBron James, who's going to be 36, 37, 38, and sign a long-term deal here and take these same kind of risks and not really be able to add a whole lot of interesting pieces to this roster? Or do I just want to go out and see what I'm going to do as a real free agent? And I think he may end up choosing that second route. I also would not be surprised if he ends up doing a 1+1, gives LeBron one more year in LA, and then hits free agency in 2019 when a ton of teams are saving up money and there'll be a lot of, I think, very interesting options. So we'll see what happens with Davis. But I thought, you know, hey, it's a quote that is more exciting than what could have happened, certainly, and more exciting than what I expected. So we'll see if anything ends up that way down the line. But I definitely think there's an opportunity. I think there's an opportunity that Davis is not going to stay in LA long term. I know everyone has kind of written that thing that this guy is going to stay here. But I don't know. I mean, LA does not have that much to offer in terms of winning. And I think at this point in Davis's career, he's pretty set on wanting to do that. I think they felt they had a really good chance at getting a third star to play with Davis and LeBron. That didn't end up working out. And had they done so, I think they would have been a lot more excited. Kind of interesting from a little bit of a Bulls tie-in and that same type of thing. Surprised me a little bit that they didn't pursue Jimmy Butler or that there wasn't any kind of motivation to bring him in there. I thought that would have been a really nice fit. Jimmy's definitely a winner, could do a lot of things for them, can be a shot maker. He's been durable. I think that would have actually been a really nice fit, but they waited on Kawhi and then ended up short. But boy, would that team feel a lot better to me if they had Jimmy Butler on it. And for Butler himself, like, why would you choose Miami over LA? I mean, I guess there's a little bit of the cost of living, but you still have really nice weather in both places. I mean, I think LA is probably a little nicer than Miami. I don't know. Anyway, just an odd thing. Maybe Dwayne Wade just completely sold the guy on that. But fun news. Fun to think about Anthony Davis potentially being in a Bulls uniform. I love how Bulls fans immediately joke, yeah, he'll be in a Bulls uniform when he's 35 and washed up. I think that's kind of funny because it's like we got Dwayne Wade in that scenario and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, the Bulls just only signed washed up guys. I guess we also got Ben Wallace. Okay, maybe I've talked myself into there being a little bit of truth to that. All right, so next topic for today, I want to discuss Otto Porter Jr. a little bit. And Otto Porter Jr. was a guy the Bulls traded for, and we kind of feel, and I think rightly so at this point, that Otto Porter Jr. is better than what the Bulls could have done had they used their cap space in this offseason. And so it ended up being a nice trade. I was a little critical of it at the time because I thought if you could find a way to keep open a couple of max salary slots, that you do that and you try and chase two max guys this offseason. We did see a couple different team-ups this offseason, and so that maybe would have been a possibility. I think the problem with that is that the guys who did end up teaming up with each other ended up being guys who clearly were looking for better situations than the 22-win Bulls were going to offer, and so they probably weren't going to team up here anyway. But Otto Porter, one other thing that's interesting is we've all, I think, long assumed, nice player but kind of overpaid, and we're going to have him for this year and next year, and then he'll roll off the books in 2019, and the Bulls will then have max cap space in. They can either choose to try to bring Porter back somehow, or they can pursue other free agents, and we'll see how that goes. And I started thinking about, will Otto Porter actually opt out? I think that's actually fairly interesting, because when you go look at the 2020 free agent class, there is a chance that Otto Porter might be the number one free agent in that class. And if he is, he may opt out and say, well, I'll see how much money I can get. If I can get close to my money but get 5 years tacked on or 4 years tacked on, you know, maybe that's worth doing. And so here's kind of a rundown of the guys who are free agents next year. You have Anthony Davis, who I just discussed. I think right now people feel it's most likely he's going to stay in L.A. And Davis is clearly the premier free agent if he does not stay in L.A. But I think most people feel that that's kind of what he's going to do. Even I feel it's likely what he's going to do. I think if he doesn't want to stay in L.A. long term, he's just going to do the 1+1. I should have probably done a little prep work before this to see how many years he's been in the league. But he might do one of those things to try to get to the 10-year mark, and then he can sign the 35% max or whatever else. Or maybe he's So I think maybe there's something like that in there. I forget how many years he has left exactly to get to that point. But I think there's a good chance he does a 1+1 just to see where things are. And a lot depends on what happens with that season. If they end up winning a title, I think you can say pretty likely he stays in L.A. If they don't win a title and they have a first-round exit or miss the playoffs or something really bad, I think you'll see Anthony Davis move on. Siakam in Toronto is probably the next highest guy, depending on your viewpoint. Toronto will clearly match whatever offer they get for him, so he's not really going to be on the market. Draymond Green is out there. I think he is probably going to stay with Golden State. I think we kind of assume that. When you look at what Golden State has done so far, they've doubled down on all of their existing guys. I have gone on record in saying that I think their GM, Bob Myers, or whoever makes all of their decisions, if it's Bob Myers in committee, are actually not very good. I don't think they've made a lot of great decisions. And I think they'll just max Draymond or whatever they do to keep Draymond. And I think they'll probably vastly overpay him. I think Draymond Green is one of the most overrated players in the league. Either way, I think he stays in Golden State. You've got Jaylen Brown, who's a restricted free agent. Who knows what will happen. But I'd say Otto Porter, if he has a good season, is, you know, probably going to be better than Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown may have a great season. We'll see. He's still young enough to improve. You've got Michael Conley, who may or may not opt out. I think at his age, I'd say Porter is likely to be better than him. You've got Kyle Lowry, who will be 34. I mean, it's hard to see anyone thinking Kyle Lowry is going to be better. Brandon Ingram, a restricted free agent. Just kind of depends what he does this year. He's a guy who's kind of viewed as empty calories. I'd say Otto Porter is probably better than him. You've got DeMar DeRozan, who's 31. I think I'd rather have Otto Porter than 31 DeMar DeRozan, most likely, depending on what happens. You got Buddy Hield from Sacramento. He's restricted, so I don't think the Kings will let him go. Probably not really available. And you got Andre Drummond, who's not really a scorer, plays probably the least position in basketball, can't stretch the floor. Good player, but I'd say he's probably less valuable than Otto Porter. So if I'm a general manager and I'm playing for the next 5 years, and I look at kind of these guys, these are the guys who are out there, you know, kind of sort of in the conversation. If Davis is not really available, and then Siakam and Hield aren't really available, Jaylen Brown, if he has a great year, probably won't really be available. Maybe Draymond Green is available. But I think that maybe DeMar DeRozan is a guy you think is better. If Brandon Ingram has a great year, he probably won't be available. I mean, the guys who might be better than him are all going to be restricted, and their teams would match if they have great seasons, would be my guess. And so I think Otto Porter might just be the number one free agent. And so I think it was actually, if he has a good year, that there's a very strong probability that he will opt out. And so, I mean, that's what a player option is for, right? If a player can get more money than he's being paid, and it makes sense, he's going to opt out. And if he has a bad year, for whatever reason, he'll just opt in. Say hip injuries bother him some more and he continues to miss a lot of time or whatever else this season, then he probably opts into his contract and just takes a $28 million. So it's all going to depend on how much money he thinks he can get. But I think a lot of Bulls fans have just kind of discussed it as just this automatic that Otto Porter is going to opt out or opt in. And I really think there's a very good chance he's going to opt out. One other topic that's come up recently that I think is interesting to discuss is Zach LaVine versus Lauri Markkanen. And I discussed this a little bit on the last podcast when someone asked, why does everyone feel LaVine has a lower ceiling than Lauri Markkanen? And I said, I think that Lauri probably is, I don't know, man. I think LaVine might be the better prospect of the two. I guess it kind of depends on how much improvement more you think Lauri has left to do. But when I look at what he does, I just don't see a lot there outside of scoring, and his three-point shooting has not come around to the level you kind of would expect it to. He's not getting to the free throw line a whole ton of times. He's not at a higher true shooting percentage than Zach LaVine. He's not at a higher volume than Zach LaVine. Maybe he's a better rebounder. I mean, he's not getting more assists. His assist to turnover ratio is not as good if you want to, you know, look at it from that perspective. He's more turnovers than assists. Zach LaVine, also a high turnover player. But so these are the two guys, though, who I think need to step up, and maybe Porter a little bit, except, you know, Porter, I think we kind of feel good about being a two-way player. But these are the two guys who are going to determine the Bulls' season, and these are the two guys you kind of feel have the greatest potential to move the needle. And I think with both guys, you're going to see a little bit different looks because they're now playing with real NBA players around them. And I think the big hope is going to be that Tomas Satoransky, and I'm going to go Tomas instead of Thomas until I see otherwise, just because it looks like Tomas. I don't know why everyone pronounces it Thomas. It probably is Thomas just because I heard it that much, but I don't know. Maybe that's crazy me. But Satoransky, maybe we'll just go with that and we'll not even discuss it. Satoransky, you know, looks like a guy who's not going to need to shoot the ball a lot. Looks like he's going to pass first. He's going to find guys where they need to be. And I think from that sense, Satoransky is going to help both LaVine and Markkanen a whole lot in the starting lineup, much more so than Chris Dunn did. Chris Dunn, I think it was said very well on the Cash Considerations podcast with Ricky O'Donnell and Jay Pat, and they had a special guest who I forget who it was, and I forget which of the three of them made this point, but they basically said Chris Dunn never figured out that he is the fifth option on the floor if everyone is healthy. If you had Porter, LaVine, Carter, and Markkanen and Dunn out there, Dunn is the last of those guys you want to shoot the ball. And he never really came to that conclusion. You never really pass the ball enough, look for a shot way too much, the least efficient guy on the floor, and still shot the balls if that wasn't true. And I think that's going to be a big thing for Dunn if he ever sticks in the league, is coming to that realization and doing a little bit better in that area. But Satoransky is the exact opposite of that. I think he'll be the guy, kind of like Ryan Arcidiacono, except with much more skill and size, better defensive ability, and better pure passing ability, and more creativity, and a little bit more creation ability. I think he'll be able to be enough of a threat that he creates a lot more openings and then a lot of good looks for these other guys. And I expect that that lineup can really play well, you know, overall. And I think that is one of the big things that is something to be excited about. And I think with him there, we're going to get to see Markkanen and LaVine both have their best chance to step forward and do something exciting. And I think if they can, then that is really what you'll see make those guys step up now compared to where they were before. And so if that happens, then I think we'll have a lot more exciting times ahead for the Chicago Bulls. But it will be between Lauri and Zach to see who can really step up and play really well. And I still think Zach LaVine is the more likely of those two guys. I look at what LaVine did last year, and I think if he just can cut his turnovers down, cut away some of the sloppy play, if he can remove some of his lowest percentage type shots because the offense and the players around him overall are better, and he makes just slightly better decisions. And then his defense just goes up a little bit, not a whole lot. I think all of a sudden, Zach LaVine is really a pretty big, beastly type of player. So we'll see how all of that shakes out for those guys. But with the All-Star game in Chicago, there's a lot of talk about one of these guys becoming an All-Star. I think if one of them does, it's probably Zach LaVine. The other topic that I think has been hitting the Bulls fans a lot, and I discussed it a little bit last week, but I'm going to go into a little more depth this week and discuss a few more options, is the Denzel Valentine and Chris Dunn, just get rid of these guys. I'm surprised at how many people want to get rid of these guys, and this will tie into some of the questions later. I would not get rid of these guys. Like, what? There's no reason to get rid of these guys. So you're going to free up a roster spot. I mean, there's no one left to sign. You're not going to get anyone who has more potential than these guys. I'm not excited about Chris Dunn's future. I'm not excited about Denzel Valentine's future. Denzel not playing 5-on-5 yet, which is clearly bad news. And his injury, you would have hoped him to be much further along. I don't really know the full details on it, but man, that seems like a long time for ankle surgery. So that's not great at all. Either way, there's still a decent amount of time before training camp, preseason, the season starts. I don't see anyone you're going to sign that has more potential than Denzel Valentine, who at the worst case looks like at least a good ball handler, shooter, and rebounder. Even if he can't defend at all, he can give you a little bit of creation, and he can dribble the ball, bring the ball up the floor, he can shoot, and he can rebound. I mean, who else are you going to find that could potentially give you that? I mean, even if he's hurt, like, it's not like you're locked in. We're not doubling down on him. You're not paying him more money. He's expiring effectively this year anyway. And the same is kind of true with Chris Dunn. I mean, like, what is the downside of keeping these guys? And so I just don't see that. Now I'll discuss that a little bit more later. But worst case scenario, as I stated last week, you're going to need salaries to match and trade if you want to improve this team at the deadline. And you don't have a whole lot. You've got Felicio, who has a year after this year in his contract. So that'll be viewed as a negative in a trade scenario. So I think that's not going to be the best. But theoretically, you know, you could still use him for salary matching. And you still might need to use him with both Dunn and Valentine to get something done. So anyway, a little bit more on that to come later. But I think these guys are better than the minimum caliber players you're going to get if you just open up the roster spot. And so now we're going to go into the mailbag. I ask on Twitter usually about a day in advance for anyone has anything they want me to talk about on the podcast. And so far I'm able to get to all the questions because apparently I'm not that popular on Twitter and don't get that many questions. So that's good news for everyone. Won't make the podcast too long. We'll just jump right into Eric Lee. Maybe I'm in the minority, but can you talk about how Dunn can be contributing factor off the bench? I believe his skill set is best in the second unit. Just have to see how he handles that type of role. And so I said I'd talk a little bit more about Dunn, and that's why I waited on some of these things till now. I do think that Dunn can be better off the bench than he would be as a starter, because off the bench, he's not necessarily going to be playing with four guys who are better options than him to score the ball. There might be a little bit more room for him to take shots and try and generate offense. Now, I think the Bulls will probably stagger their lineups. I don't think they're just going to play all five starters, sub all five bench guys. So at any given moment, he'll still probably be playing with one or two guys who should be shooting ahead of him. But I do think it's a better role than he was as a starter. I think if I was Chris Dunn, what I would look to do at this point in my career is I would have done nothing this season, offseason, except work on hitting my three-point shot and whatever defensive drills I could do to improve my defense, and looking at tape and trying to become a help defender. If I were to try and do anything as Chris Dunn, I would try and improve those facets. And I say that because watching Chris Dunn shoot, his shot is not broken. And he looks like a guy, there's no reason watching his form that I feel like he couldn't become a decent three-point shooter. He doesn't have a super high arc, but he doesn't have a really flat arc. He's got more arc than, say, Derrick Rose. I think he could just become a decent three-point shooter. He doesn't have any weird hitches in his shot or any weird motion. He doesn't have, you know, like a poor stance or poor arm movement. Like, he has all the kind of fundamentals down on his stroke that would make you feel like he could become a decent shooter. So I would be working on that and just trying to become more into a 3-and-D point guard, kind of like a Patrick Beverley. I think that is the type of role that Chris Dunn could maybe achieve at this point. And if he does become a good three-point shooter, his odds of becoming
a better version of Patrick Beverley, where he becomes someone who can initiate more offense and break guys down off the dribble, create a little bit for himself, and is more of a threat out there as a shooter, I think he'll have more value. I think that's how you would maximize his improvement. And I think that is true for him no matter what. But on the bench, I think that's a little bit less necessary than as a starter, because on the bench you can afford to take a few more of those bad shots and press the issue and, you know, do a little more ball handling and try and create more off the dribble, because there's, you know, a little bit less around him that's going to do better, and then he should theoretically be going against weaker defenders. I do think it'll be interesting to sit back and see, does Chris Dunn even have the chance or the opportunity to really get much done on the bench? I do think it's a better role for him, but the Bulls would have to prioritize playing Chris Dunn in a bench role over Kobe White and Ryan Arcidiacono. And I don't know that Chris Dunn is going to get a shot over either of these guys. And so my follow-up to the Chris Dunn discussion is, I think there's a really good chance that the Bulls might Tim Thomas Chris Dunn, if you're not around since the Tim Thomas era. That is when the Bulls just told a guy to go home and paid him anyway. And it's not something you see super often, but when the Bulls were, I think that was like the first time we'd really seen that happen. And a few other teams have done that now, where it's just like, yeah, we're not going to use you. Your attitude is not great. Just stay away from the team. Here's your money. I think Chris Dunn might end up in that role if he's not able to be someone who's positive in the locker room, and if he's causing problems, and if he's fighting over minutes, because I don't think he's going to start with a place in this rotation unless he really comes in and he's done exactly what I said in training camp, and he's proving himself both as a shooter and as a defender, and is a guy who tries hard and puts a lot of effort, and he stops just making lazy passes and trying to take a whole ton of shots at below 50% your shooting percentage. So we'll see. I mean, I agree with your point that I do think Dunn's best fit would be in the role you described, but I don't think that role is even going to be open to him. TNAC23, describe your best case, but still realistic, improvement scenario, and if it happens, how good will the Bulls be? For example, Zach makes a leap like last year with better decision-making and better defense, or Laurie gets stronger in the post, or Wendell stays healthy and starts hitting his J at a high clip, or Denzel comes back and gives the Bulls a legit shooter off the bench. And I have another question from Mr. Seifert. What is your realistic best-case scenario for the Bulls this season? So I'm going to discuss both of these at one time. I'm actually going to quickly take a quick water break. Sorry, no editing skills here. I'm sure that was a riveting 10 seconds of podcasting, listening to me drink water, but boy, the throat was starting to get bad. So I'm going to just kind of roll these into one question. The best realistic off-season improvements to me actually would probably be Chris Dunn coming back and doing what I said. I think that would actually make the biggest difference for the team if all of a sudden he came back as a good three-point shooter and he played defense up to his reputation and not just out of reputation as a defender, and then remove the stupid turnovers and stop trying to force shots. If Chris Dunn could get back on track to being like a really good starting caliber point guard, which I thought after his first season with the Bulls he was on that path, that would make a huge difference for this team, whether he has a bench role or not. And I don't know that there's room for him to do it. I don't know that he'll even have the opportunity to do it. But I think this is one of the things that no one even considers as a possibility. And maybe it's not. I think the Bulls may have moved on. There's been rumors that his work ethic is poor and that he's checked out and he's not interested in the team. So maybe that one isn't really that realistic. I think of the things that were mentioned, Wendell staying healthy, there's really no reason to think that won't happen. Hitting his J at a high clip, that would be the big improvement. I think that would make a huge difference. Of the things mentioned, I don't think Lowry in the post would do much for the Bulls. I don't think they're going to run a whole ton of post offense for Lowry. I do think Zach just making better decisions and playing better defense would be a big improvement. But I think overall, the most realistic thing that's going to happen to give this Bulls their best case offseason is you just see incremental improvements from Zach LaVine. For Zach, I just want to see his scoring stay similar. I don't expect him to get any better. I think he's really excellent there already. I want to see the turnovers go down and the decision-making be a little better from that regard. And then I want to see his defense just continue to incrementally get better. He's gotten better as he's been in the league. He's just maybe a step below average now. I want to see him get up to average. With Lowry, I just want to see him do a little bit more than just score. I want to see that three-point percentage go up, and I want to see him do a little bit more as a passer and as a overall player. I do think that in his position, he's not really had those opportunities quite so much, especially without having good players around him consistently. That should be different this year, so we may get to see a better look from Lowry. But from him, I just want to see incrementally better three-point shooting and overall just a little bit more efficiency out of him, and I think we'll feel better out of Wendell. Just be healthy and continue on the track you're on as, you know, a two-way player that helps the Bulls all around the court. Agreed, being able to just be a stretch five, I think, would be tremendous. Just getting that percentage up there, but not maybe having a high number of attempts, maybe only taking the very open ones from the corners. But being a threat and forcing guys to guard you out there would make a really big difference. Denzel coming back, I think at this point that seems like a reach, given he's not playing 5-on-5, to expect anything from him there. But then the big thing would just be seeing Thaddeus Young stay healthy and have the impact, and Satoransky maybe grow a little bit and kind of being maybe the potential leader of this team. I think that would have a huge, huge help. Whether Coby White gives you anything, who knows. We'll see there. Oh, I forgot. I missed this extra text from Mr. Seifert. His version was a try-hard year that ends the team just missing the playoffs, hopefully getting some decent lottery luck at the end of it. Levine and Lowry becoming all-stars, growth from WCJ and flashes from White. That was his best-case scenario for the Bulls offseason. And so, Bulls season. So what I see if the Bulls kind of do the things I mentioned, and I think I brought this up on that Big Red Bus. I don't think I mentioned it last week on this show. But my outcome with this, if this happens, is I think the Bulls win in the 40s. And I think they make the playoffs. And I have said, I think that there's no reason that they could not finish as high as the fourth seed. I don't think it's likely that they will. I think that's a stretch scenario. But I discussed, like, who is so great that's ahead of them outside of Milwaukee and Philadelphia and probably Boston. But even Boston, I don't know how much benefit of the doubt I want to give them. Is Kemba Walker so superior to Zach LaVine, really? Like, I don't know why everyone thinks that. Like, oh, Kemba Walker is this all-star. He's tremendous. He scored 25 a game on a team that didn't make the playoffs. Like, okay, great. So did Zach LaVine. Like, what makes Kemba Walker so freaking amazing? Zach scored that much with high efficiency. I really struggle to see how people are so low on LaVine relative to some of these other guys on teams that suck and score the same number of points. And it's like Kemba Walker's worth 30-plus million. And I was listening to the Dunked On podcast, and I love Nate Duncan and Danny Leroux. I love that podcast. It's my favorite. And they were discussing the East look back. And they both said the Zach LaVine contract looked better than expected. I think everyone feels that way. After that ACL year, he was below 50% true shooting percentage. And his volume was a little bit down. And this year, really high volume, really good efficiency. Took a step forward on defense, was a much, much better player. Everyone should be happier about that contract. But even then, they were both kind of like, yeah, he's probably an okay player. I'm just surprised at how low the opinion on LaVine is relative to what he's been able to deliver in the NBA. And I know there's flaws there, and hopefully he can fix some of those flaws, but I don't see where Kemba Walker is some super winner that is just doing all these amazing, amazing things relative to Zach LaVine and what he did last year. Now, Walker has been doing it for more years. He's more consistent. But then that's also a trailing indicator because he's much, much older. I mean, he's likely to fade on this contract. So anyway, it's kind of neither here nor there, really. But so when I look at the Celtics even, I'm like, how much talent do they really have? I mean, if I say that Lowry is similar to Tatum and LaVine ended up similar to Walker, and I don't think that's a crazy scenario. And then I start looking at the rest of the depth and stuff on each team. Like, they've got Jaylen Brown. I don't think is anything special. Marcus Smart, I don't think is anything special. They lost Al Horford, who I think was really, really good. Like, I don't see any reason to think that this team is a more than a 50-win team. And I think that's a pretty optimistic number for them, really. Except that maybe it's just the East doesn't have any juggernauts in them. So maybe it's just beating up on bad teams. But Like, I look at that and I think, like, could Otto Porter, Thaddeus Young, and Tomas Satoransky be as good as their next guys? Like, I don't see why not. I really don't. And when I look at Orlando, like, who do they have that's so good? You know, like, I don't see, like, so much talent there. Look at Detroit. It's like, it's a miracle that Blake Griffin was so healthy last year, and they still were only around 40-win team. They're almost certainly not going to be as healthy this year. I mean, I just don't see, like, who are the teams? I mean, Indiana lost Bojan, who had an amazing season for them last year. Oladipo is going to be out till January, and he'll probably be rusty. I mean, you can't really count on getting a lot there. They did get Brogdon in, but, you know, he's more of a super role player than a star player, probably, and has had his own injury problems. I really do like, you know, Brogdon, though, but I just don't love anything that Indiana did. I mean, I think they're probably weaker. They lost Collison. They lost Young as well, who are strong contributors for them. So I don't think they're in a better position. I don't think Miami has much of anything outside of Butler. Maybe Dragic can have a turnaround season at his age. I mean, it doesn't seem super likely. I just don't see who all these other teams are. Brooklyn doesn't seem better to me this year than they were last year, really swapping out Irving and D'Angelo Russell. I mean, I guess Irving is a better player, but Irving is historically hurt quite a bit, and Kevin Durant's not going to play this year. So it's not like that team has all kinds of, you know, star talent there either that you think they're going to be great. So I think the East is wide open. Now, I'm not saying the Bulls are going to be this team that comes from nowhere and outplays the expectations and is a team that finishes fourth. But really, this is the Bucks, the 76ers, and no one. I'm even going to take a step down after just talking through the Celtics situation. It's those two teams and no one. So even going as high as the third seed is not out of the question in the Bulls' best-case scenario, where every single player improves and you get, you know, quality rookie minutes from White. And it's super unlikely that happens, right? Super unlikely. I think the Bulls probably are going to win in the upper 30s. I think that's probably about what happens for them. But it is not at all crazy for me to say if they said they won like 47 teams and that ended up being the three seed in the East. 47 games, three seed. Would not be crazy to me at all if that happened. So maybe that's just a whole lot of Bulls Kool-Aid right now. I mean, it also isn't crazy if they win, you know, 29 games and this thing was a disaster. Like, I don't want to make a sound by saying that, wow, this could happen, and so everyone starts thinking, oh, you're crazy. I mean, I like to give the upside thoughts because I'm a happy guy. But, I mean, it's also possible, like, Lowry is just not the real deal. He's not that good. It's also that possible that Zach LaVine just had an aberration of a year last year, and he can't keep up this level of efficiency and volume, and that his defense doesn't step forward, and he remains kind of empty calories. It's possible that a bunch of guys could continue to get injured or whatever else. My view, though, is if you don't hit around 38, 39 wins, that this rebuild was probably a fail. It probably is. Like, people say, well, if you go from 22 to 34, like, that's a good improvement. You were 28 wins, basically, 2 years ago with kind of the same core. Last year, you had 22 wins because you played a G League roster for literally, like, half the season. I mean, you're playing you know, like a roster of like Harrison, Diakono, Blakeney, God, Sampson, a bunch of just crap for like half the season. So I think that is the reason why you step down. And you have to view this team more as a base level talent team, you know, closer to like 30 something wins. Before, if they just had like legit replacement level players, they're probably around a 30 win talent type team. If they just stayed healthy. And then if you ignore the fact that they then just added a bunch of guys, like veteran guys, who are going to add quality minutes to them, you know, they have additions that should help, and then they should have internal improvement that should help. And so, you know, if they tank because of a whole ton of injuries again, then maybe this thing is a bust because these guys are just injury prone and will never stay healthy. But maybe you don't give up on their talent just yet. But if you have a generally healthy season, and I don't mean everyone plays 82 games. I'm not talking about that as health. I'm just saying, you don't have things like Lowry misses 2 months of the season. Wendell Carter Jr. misses half the season. You know, Dunn missed like half the season. LaVine missed 20 games, and they kind of rested him. You know, you just brought in Otto Porter after the trade deadline, and he missed, you know, most of what was left of the season, only played 14 games. I mean, really, compared to this 28-win team, you should have good improvement from Zach LaVine, should have good improvement from Lauri Markkanen. You have added Otto Porter, Tomas Satoransky, and Thaddeus Young to the mix. So I feel like that is a good deal of improvement, and you have basically lost Robin Lopez. And I guess also you've added Wendell Carter Jr.
Sorry,
added him as well. So that's a lot more talent coming in than talent going out from that 28-win team. So I think that this team realistically should be a high 30s, low 40s type team. And if you don't see that, that means these guys aren't improving at the rate that they should. And you have to start thinking about blowing up whatever you have left. So I went kind of maybe from like super positive to super negative all at once. But I do think that the positive outcome is there. Like, it is definitely possible for me. If I view them as like a team that should win in the upper 30s, it's definitely possible they could exceed. I mean, I think upper 30s is a reasonable expectation. I think it's definitely possible the guys then do a little better than I think, and they are now in the mid to upper 40s, especially if you have great health, you know, exceptional health. You know, then I think you could have something really pretty special happen there, and I'm kind of excited about that. From Dan O'Connell, I mean, how much burn do you think Dunn and White will get together, assuming everyone stays healthy? They won't. Do you anticipate LaVine and Satoransky picking up a lot of minutes at the three? So I heard something on, I think it was the Dunkdown podcast, where they mentioned that actually Satoransky was kind of upset having to play the three in Washington. I don't know if that's true or not, but he really did not want to do that. So I think that's just kind of an interesting nugget to put in the back of our heads. I think in the modern NBA, I don't know that you worry too much about the 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. Like, you just, it seems like now we've gone to a point where you just put your best players out there and see what happens. And I think the Bulls will largely do that. I think LaVine, White, Dunn, Shaq, Satoransky, you know, I think those guys, you can put any of them out there. Yeah, if they have to guard LeBron James, it's going to be a problem. If they have to guard Kawhi Leonard, it's going to be a problem. But if I start trying to look like who are these amazing small forwards you're going to have to deal with in the Eastern Conference, and I come up with Giannis, and then after that, you know, I don't know. Are you that scared of Tobias Harris? Maybe Ben Simmons is such a huge point guard. Like, we should really maybe call him a point forward, and he's more of a three. He's maybe another guy a little bit difficult to guard, but you don't have to guard him to shoot, so you always have that going for you. You can always help on him, and it's not so bad. Jimmy Butler, I guess. Yeah, if he's more of a three than a two, I don't know. Like, I just don't think that there's like this huge amount of talent in the East that you need to worry about it so much. And the Bulls are clearly not a team that's looking at making it to the NBA Finals this season, where whether they can check LeBron or Kawhi Leonard or Paul George or James Harden for 7 games is going to become a huge factor. So while I do think that perimeter defense is probably a really big thing at the small forward position if you're in the West, because you're going to have to probably maybe the three best teams in the West are all going to have guys who are extremely difficult to defend at those positions, it's not something that I think is going to be this huge issue that's going to just destroy them game in and game out in the Eastern Conference. I mean, I think for the most part, you're going to be forcing kind of lesser players to be the matchup advantage if you throw Shaq Harrison on them in defense in the East, and then some team takes their like fourth best option. It's like, well, because Shaq Harrison's on him, maybe we'll try and see if he can use his size to get something done. I just think that that's probably not a scenario that becomes a really big problem for you. And so in that sense, I do think a lot of these other guys like LaVine, Satoransky, or White might pick up a good chunk of time at the three. You know, White could do that. And I don't know who you're going to call the three if, say, you're running a Satoransky, LaVine, White lineup. I don't even think it really matters. You know, you'll have those guys who can probably all switch and defend kind of whoever. excuse me, boy. Throat getting dry again, but we're almost done, so I'm going to force through it instead of giving you another water break. I don't think Dunn and White will play a whole lot together, only because I think there's a pretty good chance Dunn won't play at all, or will be very little. If he's a bad attitude, I think they might send him home. I still think they're actively going to look to trade him. And White, they've already kind of pumped the brakes a lot on how much they feel they're going to play White. Like, if you listen to some of the comments that Paxton has made, he's made it pretty clear to keep expectations low. They're definitely not positioning White to be the starter. Clearly looks like he's going to be a bench guy. I'm sure they'll try and get him some burn. But it doesn't look like they're like, oh yeah, we're super high on Coby White playing a whole ton of minutes this year. So given that neither guy really projects to play a lot of minutes, I don't think those guys will play almost any minutes together, most likely. And so that will wrap it up for this edition of the Bulls Beat. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you guys next week.